It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game right here at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling Game Plus, and iHeartRadio. How you doing? It's Gil Alexander. Jason Kahn is here as well. Jason, you get scared right before the show. I was like, that's it. I'm out of here.
Yes, I was contemplating what to do in a case of an emergency.
You imagine, like, right before the show, I'm like, that's it. I've had enough. I've done one too many.
Just beep.
Rest
Cars
of the show.
Tone, yeah.
I would never do that. Never. Vinny Maiolio to close things out today. Let's do this in reverse order, as always. He's the guy that slow jams us into the weekend and the AFC and NFC Championship. We'll talk to Vinny Maiolio later on the show. JVT, our own Jonathan Von Tobel, who produced the NBA betting guide, is our senior NBA analyst. At me, JVT, we will scold Jason Kahn for acting like somehow he changed his Twitter handle. That will be fun. Maybe we'll get to other sports.
The underscore list,
it's really just
JVT.
Really just about scolding you. Jordan Sherwood will be here. We'd like to have Jordan on from ESPN West Palm, Wood on 106.3. Talk UFC 257 with him later on the show. BetMGM Grid, which I guess is a grid that's narrowing, right? Only four teams. So I don't know how much fun that's going to be. But we'll play a clip from the Megapod yesterday. We'll re-adjudicate the whole Rashard Higgins fumble thing. I want to talk about primetime action and some of the stuff that goes on at night there with in-game opportunities, really special. We have people calling in, some of our experts calling in and say, hey, you guys should bet this now and that kind of thing. So we'll get into that as well. But let's begin today with one of my favorites who not only is kind enough to join us as a guest every week to talk Premier League with us, but in addition, I am always flattered that he listens to the show and seems to never miss a note throughout the week from True Media Networks. Ladies and gentlemen, used to be with ESPN Stats and Info with True Media Networks now, and of course the host of the Expected Value podcast. It's our buddy Paul Carr. How you doing, Paul?
Good morning, Gil. And I was actually listening to the Megapod this morning, and I'm a little bit scared because I was kind of agreeing with Todd about the Higgins thing. I'm kind of okay with the rule. But now I'm rethinking everything I've ever believed in now that I'm on the same side as Todd.
That's right. Well, he took a different angle, which you know, yeah. Was clever.
Shocking.
Clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like the risk reward that the offense has to weigh if you're going to dive for it.
Mm-hmm.
I won't argue that it necessarily makes sense, the current rule, but I do kind of like that. Okay. Is it worth doing this? I really want to do this, but I don't because that might lose it. And then you got to kind of juggle all that in the moment, which is, you know, really hard and overthinking it. But that is kind of fun to me.
Yeah, well, we'll play that video as me, Todd Wishnev. This is from the Beating the Book Megapod. Todd Wishnev, Adam Chernoff, and Matt Brown. Adam was funny because he was just smiling through that through the Todd thing. He was like, I can't believe this guy's serious about it. and then he was like, yeah, pretty impassioned argument. Okay, first of all, so I have a whole bunch of things to check off here. First thing, yeah. Baseball card documentary, because we talked about the Mickey Mantle sale of the 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle for over $5 million earlier in the week. Did you get to watch the baseball card documentary I recommended, Jack of All Trades?
Yeah, I did find that. It was pretty interesting. The business side of just that rise and fall in a decade or less, which was right in my wheelhouse. I was big into baseball cards from about 87 to 93.
Yes.
And so I lived all that. And, you know, I didn't know any of that was going on about, you know, printing extra cards and all that. You know, I saw the inflation in packs costing, you know, they were 50 cents early on and they were like $3 and $4 and you're getting three cards by the time I was kind of on my way out. So I saw all that, how the business came into play. So that was the most interesting side to me, is how it just kind of ate itself alive in less than a decade.
Ate itself alive, told through the lens of a kid in Toronto who was the son of the largest card shop owner in Canada. And there's a whole family element to it, which is really sort of sad. But it the Ken Griffey Jr. number one card in the 89 Upper Deck set was the most amazing thing, because we were led to believe we're basically that same era. We were led to believe that it was this unbelievably valuable thing. I remember my buddy was at a baseball card show. He was like, I got one for $25. It was like the biggest thing in the world. Come to find out that Upper Deck just completely exploited it. We're printing entire sheets of number one Griffey cards.
It's
like the whole thing.
I never had one of those cards, and it was always, you know, I was almost like ashamed of that. If like you're the relatively serious collector for a kid, and I never had one. But because the price was so high and whatever.
But anyway, that's among other documentary recommendations this week, Jack of All Trades, Jack of All Trades is Netflix. I aired yesterday the Blackjack one that, by the way, Crack watched it immediately yesterday, said it was awesome, and I knew he would think so. That's on Amazon Prime. which was a great, we'll get the title for you later because I forgot the exact title of it.
I think it was Inside the Edge.
Inside the Edge. You saw that as well? Yeah.
No, I looked it up. I put it on my watch list. It's coming soon.
Spectacular. Covers all the angles, methods, trespassing. It was really great. It's Gil Alexander, Paul Carr. This is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Fubo Sling, Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. I was probably among a million people to retweet this yesterday. I retweeted Will Brinson. I'll give him the credit because he was the first person I saw that had this tweet. Will Brinson, who writes for the CBS Sports, writes on the NFL. This is Dan Campbell, Paul. Dan Campbell. We have to show this. It's the 29 seconds of Dan Campbell's opening press conference as new head coach of the Detroit Lions.
So this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right. And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right. That's going to be the mentality.
There's so many things I have to say about this,
How
Paul.
How could that have gone worse?
First of all, in the year 2021, that impressed someone so much, like, we've got to hire this guy.
For 6 years.
For 6 years, that's right. Chris Spielman, now it makes all the sense in the world. Like, I could see that interview, them just grunting, monosyllabic grunts at each other, and finally they're, like, wrestling on the ground, and Spielman's like, you're my guy. And he also, wild. In the whole thing there, he's also going, just in case you can't follow it, he's like, all right, just in case we had trouble understanding what he was talking about. This is so bad. Like, this is just it's a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Yeah. I mean, he's football guy, you know?
Yeah.
Football guy that, you know, just, he knows football and loves football. And I mean,
he's like
Todd
Wishnev's football guy.
He was the interim coach for my Dolphins for a couple of games a few years back. And I mean, similar sorts of things. And it was one of those interim coaches, like, yeah, we never even considered seriously keeping him after that. You know, it was fine for the get to the last couple of games of the season, blah, blah, blah. It's just strange. Like, it feels like this is straight out of 1982 or pick any year, really.
I'm going for it on 4th and 6 at my own 33 and punting 4th and 2 at plus territory.
Right.
So all over that.
Yeah.
Detroit Lions, good luck to you and your fan base.
I'm sorry. I have a couple of Lions friends and I just kind of texted them yesterday. I was like, I'm sorry, guys.
Look at the adjusted under.
Oh, so bad. All right, AFC and NFC championship this weekend. Actually, chronologically, it's NFC first in order, and then the AFC. Green Bay and Kansas City, your favorites in this. And Patrick Mahomes, it looks like now. I mean, we're Friday morning. I think we can say with pretty good confidence now he's a go. Green Bay, 3.5-point favorites. Kansas City, still 3-point favorites. Without knowing that with 100% certainty, your thoughts on both?
I mean, I'm kind of with you, leaning favorites on both, but if I had to pick one play, I'd probably take the Packers to cover there. I just think, I mean, I look at, so last week the Saints were 2.5-point favorites over the Bucks, and I think we can all agree the Packers are more than a point better than the Saints, and it's only 3.5, which seems a little weird to me. I know there's, you know, some weather factors, and the Bucks played okay last week. I just think Green Bay, and they're statistically the best team in the league over the first 15 or so plays of a game. So, you know, and we see this almost every game. They just drive down, they get 10 points, they get 14 points the first couple drives. So I think that's in their favor. And from there, they just kind of grind you down. And there was a good piece I read on 538 about how the Bucks, they have this good run defense. And because they put a lot of people in the box, and that encourages teams to pass against them, which plays right into Green Bay's hands. Will they do that again? I don't know, but they've done it against pass happy teams so far this year. And so I just expect Green Bay, I expect it to kind of look like last week's game. You know, Green Bay never out of control. You've said all year, you know, Rodgers is just making this look easy and he's in control. And that's kind of what I think is going to happen again.
I ended up with Green Bay first half, Green Bay game, and I'm going to go Kansas City game too. You know, And by the way, while that will sound to people like, oh, wow, big deal, you're picking all of it. Like, anybody who tells you this week that there are square, quote-unquote square picks and sharp picks, please, if you hear that this weekend, just stop immediately caring about whatever that person is saying. Because everybody will be on every side. There's only two games. Green Bay and Kansas City, I've always thought it was a collision course. I continue to think so now, and I think they both cover. The only other thing about football, you wanted to chime in because I talked about, we brought up the old Sports Talk Radio thing on Philip Rivers, Hall of Famer or not. You're the former ESPN Stats and Info guy, now with True Media Networks. What's your take?
I love Hall of Fame debates just because I like going to Halls of Fame, and it just tells the story, and you get to see who's in the league. And, you know, I know about old players because they're in the Hall of Fame, things like that. For me, Rivers is maybe like the first guy out of the Hall of Fame from a quarterback standpoint. To me, he was the fifth best quarterback of his era at best. You know, he's behind Manning and Rodgers and Brees and Brady. And then it gets a little bit fuzzy with Roethlisberger and Eli and Kurt Warner or something like that. I was looking at his numbers a little closer yesterday. He had two or three years where he maybe had a case as the top three-ish quarterback, which I think you've got to have a decent stretch of that to really have a good Hall of Fame case. I just think, though, the inflation of numbers makes, you know, I know he's fifth in yards and things like that. It's just not quite what it used to be. And, you know, Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford are going to be in the same spot in a few years. And I don't think anyone's thinking they're in the Hall of Fame. So for me, he's just outside. I mean, he was good for a long time, and there's something to that. To me, I'd say he's just outside that Hall of Fame quality to me.
Should he and will he are two different questions. So if you say he shouldn't, do you still handicap it that he will?
I think it's going to be, in a lot of ways, dependent on how the ballot plays out. You know, I don't think he gets in before Eli gets in, and Eli's going to go on the ballot like a year before, but probably take a few years to get in. And then, you know, who's on? Then Rodgers will probably, and Breeze and Brady are going to come a few years after.
They'll get lost in that. Yeah,
that's, you know, kind of like this receiver shuffle we've seen the last few years, where you've got some good receivers that have to wait a while to get in.
Oh,
so maybe eventually, but not right away, just because all these other guys of his era are going to have to go in first.
Yeah, receivers get the worst of it. If you're not Moss or Rice, if you're not like the true elite of elites, you end up waiting, you know.
I think Chris Carter had to wait a year or two, which, you know, is
Art Monk waited nine years. Just go back in here. I mean, it's just he retired with the most catches in the history of the NFL, you know, so.
He was another victim of time, because all these other guys came up and made his numbers look not as good by the time he got into the Hall, but he was for his era.
Art Monk, 4 minutes standing ovation when he got in the Hall of Fame. 4 minutes. Think how long that is for a standing ovation. Great. Like, and I was there among the people. It was the Washington football fan base's big bird to the NFL establishment. And I remember looking down at Tom Jackson and Chris Mortensen, and they couldn't believe what they were seeing. I'm getting chills just thinking about it, but that's a whole other thing. All right, Premier League. There's only one Premier League game this weekend. I know you have to pick on it. Before we get to that, a couple things. Liverpool loses at home yesterday to Burnley.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was like plus 1300 for a Burnley win in some places. And Liverpool's in this weird funk. They're winless in five straight games. They're down to third place. In some ways, they're not playing badly. Like, it's not that different than what they did last season. Last season, they were just pulling out all these games, 1-0, 2-1, when, you know, the underlying numbers gave Liverpool a slight advantage and everything just worked out in their favor, whether it's a quirky shot or something doesn't go, whatever it might be. So, I mean, the numbers, in these five games, they've outshot opponents 89 to 34, 7.2 expected goals, only given up 3.6. But Liverpool has two goals. I mean, they hit a post on a breakaway yesterday that, you know, might have ended the game in their favor. So in some ways they're not playing badly, but also at some point, you know, we're at the halfway point of the season. They're 4 points behind Manchester City, 6 points, I think, behind Manchester United, but City's the real threat. City has played one fewer game. It's, as Yogi Berra would say, it's getting late early out there for Liverpool, and they're just kind of running out of time. Having said that, they got a glimmer of hope today because Man City's Kevin De Bruyne, one of their best players in midfield, is out 4 to 6 weeks. He's going to miss the Liverpool game in a couple of weeks. So
that's huge.
There's a glimmer there. So, you know, I'm not saying I would play Liverpool like plus 800 to win the title right now, but if you think they can turn this around, now's the time to do it, because it's about as low as it's going to get. Cause they're going to have to beat Man City in a couple of weeks to have a chance. And that number will keep dropping. So,
all right. Premier League, this weekend, Aston Villa and Newcastle, what you got?
Yeah, so this is Villa's in 11th place, Newcastle's in 15th. So, you know, it looks relatively even if you're just looking at the standings, but the underlying numbers, your goal difference, your expected goals, Villa's in 5th in expected goals, and Newcastle's 19th. Newcastle is not good. They're probably lucky to stay up and not get relegated last season. And Villa they've actually been playing pretty well lately. They are winless in three straight, but that was against Chelsea and Man United and Man City. And before that, Villa was just rolling. They won three out of the four against bottom half teams. And the other one was a draw against Newcastle, or Burnley rather. They outshot them like 27-6 or something. So Villa's done well against these bottom half teams. They've won 5 of 6, 3 of them by multiple goals. I'm going to take Villa on the goal line. So Villa -1 at -120. I'll be shocked if Villa doesn't win this, and I expect them to kind of cruise a 2-0, 3-1 type of game for Villa. Again, Newcastle, not good. I don't think they have more than 8 shots in any of the last 5 or 6 games. So Villa should cruise here. The standings lie in a little bit. I like Villa here on the goal line.
All right. Villa on the goal line tomorrow. I believe that's noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, correct?
Sounds right, yeah.
Sounds right. Okay, yeah. Aston Villa giving the goal against Newcastle tomorrow. Talking to Paul Carr, by the way, at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R, on Twitter from the Expected Value podcast, wherever podcasts are distributed. So now, we went into this streak for a long time where you were telling us stories from your ESPN days. And you told you shared some unbelievable stories. The some of the highlights, the Taylor Twellman day, where mm-hmm. The what are we doing day, how you sort of, he was nervous before, nervous after, how you gave him some advice, and how he was like, was that okay? But so many stories leap to mind. Those of us who have watched this Tiger Woods documentary on HBO Max, I cannot recommend it more strongly. The first there's 2 parts. First and second. First was more the early days of Tiger. Second, sort of as the injuries and the scandals mounted. Can you take us back at ESPN to the day of the infamous Tiger car crash and what that was like?
Yeah. So to set the stage a little, one of our jobs in research is we're basically adding statistical, historical context to whatever the news of the day, the stories of the day are. So the Blue Jays signed George Springer or something. So we're pulling out the stats for, here's how good Springer has been lately. Here's how terrible Toronto's outfield was hitting last year. This is why he's a good fit, stuff like that. So we basically are generating all the stats you see here on Sports Centergraphics. So that day, it's Friday. It's the day after Thanksgiving. So it's a quiet day in the newsroom. There's not the usual buzz of as many Sports Center shows, just because there's some, college football, college basketball games getting going, all that stuff. And so this story crosses on the newswire about, hey, reports Tiger Woods been in a car crash. I think it was something we didn't report right away just because it was fuzzy. And I think I want to say TMZ broke it first, if I remember right. So at first you're like, okay, whatever, he's in a car wreck. And then, the details just slowly start trickling out. It happened at whatever, 2 or 3 in the morning. And like, that's weird. And you're trying to figure out, was there alcohol involved? Was anybody hurt? No one really knew anything. Cause this was before Twitter was really a huge news thing. Mm-hmm. Again, TMZ's leading the coverage, and this is 10, 11 years ago. So, how reliable is TMZ? All this stuff that no one's really dealt with.
It's so true. It was right before all that. Yeah.
It was weird. And so, and the thing I remember most, there was a rumor, and it was later proven to be true, but in the moment, you don't know that Woods was in critical condition in the hospital. And all of a sudden, I and the other leaders in the research room were having a conversation about, like, do we need a Tiger Woods obituary packet?
Oh, my goodness.
You just have no idea. You're trying to be prepared for these things. Because we send those out when notable sports figures die. Like, here's this. And just out of nowhere, we're having this conversation. And they're like, what is going on? And more details trickled out. And all the ridiculousness about his wife and the golf club she had and all this stuff. But there was just, more than any other time I remember in my career, we're just paralyzed because you don't know what to do. And frankly, there's not a ton we can do as researchers. This is not a moment where we're like, hey, Tiger, all this stuff happened. And hey, here's where he is on the majors list.
He's won 80 plus tournaments. Yeah, right. It's not really appropriate.
Yeah, he's chasing Ben Hogan. Like, that's not where you're going. So there's, in some ways, there's nothing we can do. And on top of that, we don't know what to do, but that conversation about a Tiger Woods obit packet, like, out of nowhere, was just one of the chilling, strange, surreal things I remember from my research days.
Yeah, and because it also was, it trickled out. Like you said, every detail was odd. He crashed into a fire hydrant in his sleepy neighborhood down the block. Like, how fast could he have been going in a 15-mile-per-hour zone? Right. Something isn't adding up. Yeah.
Yeah, you're thinking he's fine, but then you just think, it's just, there were so many possibilities, and we didn't know anything. We knew nothing of all the stuff that we know now, and the way it all came out slowly, piece by piece, and it was just a very surreal day. In the newsroom and the research room.
You brought up something there that I think people want. People probably want clarified. For compete for athletes, celebrities, or whatever, who are older, sometimes we see when one of them passes, we immediately see this unbelievable package produced. Yep. Is it true or not that for some of a certain age, there literally are pre-produced obit packages on these shows?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, you see, the one I think of most is baseball. You'll hear a Tim Kirkjian piece, you know, not long after somebody passes away.
Morbid.
It's weird. I started ESPN in 08, and one of the big things in this folder of rundowns for shows, there was a Muhammad Ali rundown for when he passed. This is 2008, and he didn't pass till 2016. And I don't know how long it had been there before I started. Like, that was like, that's the magnum opus of obit packets and stories and things like that. And so that had been there 10 years before it got to use. And that's an extreme example. But yeah, when you hear, you know, people are in bad shape, you know, Pele is the soccer example. And it's like, he's in the hospital every year. So, you know, I think I worked on an obit packet for him in like 2010 before that World Cup.
The Kirkjian thing really resonates because this year we've had so many baseball greats pass away. And I just picture Kirkjian, like, part of his job every day is to like go. It's just so morbid, but always fascinating, Paul. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
In addition to the picks, Aston Villa on the goal line, giving up a goal tomorrow against Newcastle. So Aston Villa -1 noon Pacific for that one. And you're on the pack. I like it.
Yeah.
Paul, appreciate it, and always appreciate you taking copious notes on the show, man. I'm flattered.
You bet. It's fun. Have a good weekend.
You too. Paul Carr, everybody, from the Expected Value Podcast inside the sports analytics world, wherever podcasts are distributed. We'll come back. So much more. JVT, Jordan Sherwood. We'll talk UFC 257. Vinny will be here. Primetime action, the kind of stuff you get on that show. People calling in and giving in-game tips, some of our experts. You don't want to hear this. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, brought to you by BetMGM Nevada.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. With football playoffs and basketball and hockey games every week, it's time to get into BetMGM Sports Nevada, the premier sports betting app. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. We're at Mandalay Bay on Saturdays and Sundays. I know, Jason, you're down there a lot. We have fun. Check it out. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. We have, like, you know, multiple screens here in the lovely studio here at the South Point, tip of the strip in lovely Las Vegas. And they keep showing the weekend commercials again. And so I told this yesterday, but I think it's worth telling one more time for those who missed it again. My dear friend, Dr. Bob Stoll, who, you know, is just, I love the man. But we used to live in San Francisco, the both of us, and we lived about 7 blocks away from each other. We'd always go to this restaurant on Union Street, Oshitai. Like, we probably ate there 250 times, and I might be shooting that low. But Bob and I would spend a lot of time. We talk about handicapping and all kinds of sports. And, you know, so when The Weeknd, who's doing the Super Bowl halftime show, and we're going to have lots of props on The Weeknd, and I'll have thoughts, by the way, for those who are into that kind of thing. When The Weeknd song I Can't Feel My Face came out, Bob loved the song, and we were walking down Union Street one time, and he was dating this young lady who eventually became his wife. But he was so enamored, he said, Gil, have you ever... You ever been so in love that you can't feel your face? And I looked at him and I go, no. And Bob, I don't think that's what this song is about. I think it's about cocaine. And he looked at me and with a childlike curiosity, searched for thoughts in the air and looked back down at me and with true sincerity said, no, I think it's because he's so in love. And I stared back at him and I just thought to my head, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let him have this. I'm gonna let it have this one.
Don't burst this bubble.
I don't want to burst this bubble. So I went to his. We went to his wedding. Me and Debbie Song, fashion stylist. We went to his wedding in London. And like the whole time that morning, I was like, please don't let the wedding song be I Can't Feel My Face. Please don't let it be I Can't Feel My Face. Like, I was terrified that morning. Thankfully, it was not. Anyway, the weekend, going to do the halftime show, and we'll have props, and we'll have recommendations. I don't think that will be his first song, by the way. It'll be in there, but probably not his first song. This popular one will that's out today will be. His name escapes me right now. Okay, so primetime action. Matt Brown, Danielle Alvari, Kelly Bidlin, and I do primetime action on MSG Plus weekdays, 7 to 10 Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific. And I want to plug the show this morning, and I know I bring it up a lot, but, you know, last night something happened, and just very unique to this show. And so if you're looking for in-game betting opportunities, it's not only us. By the way, Danielle fires more than all of us. Just let me point that out. She's like, yeah, I got three bets. I'm like, hey. But we get our experts, like Andy McNeil, who will chime in during the show. And it's really up to me, and I got to be better at this because I couldn't get this one in yesterday, but really what we do is we have them chiming in and texting and saying, you know, so last night in the hockey game, the Lightning were playing the Blue Jackets, and Andy texted in the middle of that game, I think the Lightning could be a good bet right now considering the fact that Torts, John Tortorelli, the coach of the Blue Jackets, is spiteful enough to sit his best forward, and that probably isn't priced into the in-game line. And what he's referring to is that Pierre-Luc Dubois had not played in 20 minutes of game time. He remained on the Columbus Blue Jackets bench. In fact, from First Ohio Battery, there was an ISO of Pierre-Luc Dubois' final shift for the Blue Jackets. The center saw 3 minutes and 55 seconds of ice time for the night and did not take a shift after the first period. So the Blue Jackets were up 1-0, and he looked really lethargic, Dubois did, in his shift. And for 20 minutes, they were down 1-0. The Lightning were down 1-0 late in the first period. And then it continued for, like, most of the second period. So, again, I got to be a better – I'm doing a show, and I'm taking in text. But at our best, what we're doing is we're conveying that information as this is happening. Sure enough, what happened? Lightning score to tie it up, one apiece. They end up going ahead 2-1. The Blue Jackets did tie them up, but they end up winning in overtime. And so the in-game bet cash. But just look, are those things going to happen every night? No. Are they going to happen every night where we can quickly communicate it to the audience? Not 100% of the time, be honest, because we're multitasking. But that's the kind of thing that show does that obviously we here in the morning can't because we don't have the games going on. So it's primetime action with me, Matt Brown, Danielle Alvari, Kelly Bidlin. I cannot recommend it enough. And we have a blast doing it, most importantly. By the way, Andy's comments about the whole thing on Twitter. Coaches rarely bench star players like this anymore. I think it's reasonable to assume that Dubois not getting any ice time wouldn't have been reflected in the live odds at the time. And quite frankly, they were not. Big plus money win for those that were able to get on in on it. Primetime action, 7 to 10 Eastern, MSG Plus, weekdays. VSiN's primetime action. Coming back, JVT. Oh, the BetMGM grid and a Megapod clip about Rashard Higgins' fumble. Let's adjudicate that next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Become a VSiN All-Access member today and get all of our expert VSiN betting analysis for NFL Conference Championship Weekend and every sport in action. For less than $22 per month, receive daily emails with our best bets from guests and hosts, 24-7 video access, and our point spread weekly betting guides. It's everything you need to increase your sports betting IQ. Start your free trial right now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. The name of the podcast is the Beating the Book podcast. We do the Megapod each and every Thursday throughout the NFL season. Yesterday, we had not only Todd Wishnev, of course, our staple. Mikey wasn't able to make it. Mike Palm had a four-hour budget meeting. But Adam Chernoff and Matt Brown were able to join us. Adam Chernoff from the Simple Handicap podcast and Matt Brown from Primetime Action. Thoughts on whether, again, inspired by the Rashard Higgins fumble when Sorensen hit him late in the first half of the Chiefs-Browns game. 16-3 was the score. Browns were taking it in. Fumbled through the end zone. Is it the worst rule in sports? Here are some thoughts from the podcast.
By the way, there was a Rashard Higgins, who could forget at the end of the first half with the line minus 6.5 in the first half. It's 16-3. He's going to the house. Sorensen gets there, knocks the ball out, fumbles through the end zone. We can debate that. I think it's the strangest rule in sports, the dumbest rule. Todd has different thoughts.
I love that rule.
It's the worst. Makes no football logic sense. Makes no sense.
There is no better rule in sports. It's the best rule.
This is the stupidest rule in sports, Todd, because there is no football logic to it.
I agree with that part.
Okay, so what's your point?
What's the solution, though?
I have a solution.
My point is this.
Yes,
here's
go ahead,
my point. Uh-huh. I agree with you. It doesn't make sense. If you're going to be consistent, like, you know, you fumble on the 26, it goes out of bounds, you get it at the 26. You fumble on the 13, you get it at the 13. Here, if you fumble at the 1, you should get it at the 1. That's the consistent position. I agree with that. The reason I love the rule is the NFL is already too offensive a game. It's offense, offense, offense. It's almost impossible to stop any good team in the NFL. So I love the fact that the guys at the 3-yard line have to have in the back of their mind, be the F careful when you reach for the goal line, because if you fumble this ball through the end zone, we're going to lose it, which means that there's got to be a couple of them who are smart enough to go, you know what, I'm not reaching it because it's too dangerous. And in a game that is so offensive already, and I like a little defense sprinkled into my ball games, I like the fact that there's a little something there that the defense gets. Finally, something for the defense. Everything in the NFL is offense, offense, offense. Oh, you sniffed on the quarterback. Pass it, roughing the passer, 15 yards. Pass interference. Oh, you touched that guy. No, pass interference. Everything is offense, offense, offense. Something for the defense.
Yeah.
And then the guy who doesn't extend the ball gets hammered by us the next day because he didn't put in the effort try and score a touchdown.
But man,
and
he
gives you the exact explanation that you just said, because you say, he's going to come out and say, I didn't want to risk fumble through the end zone. And you know what you say, Todd? You say, damn it, you idiot. You reached for the end zone and whatever. I needed that touchdown. You're going to everybody's complaining about his effort at that point. It's a 10-yard penalty is what it is. You have to take the ball back to the 10-yard line
that's ridiculous. Why 10? Why not 8? Why not 12?
But whatever it is, something, you know, punitive, loss of down, and you take the ball back to the 20. Whatever the rule is, it should not be change of possession. Because if you just step back from it for a second, just logically speaking, okay, when you fumble, but hold on, let me just make my point, if I could. So if you fumble the ball right out of bounds, the way you were talking, matriculating the ball down the field, you stated again, you get the ball back where you are. What is stepping back, what is so egregious? What is so absolutely horrific? Hold on. But think about it. It's like that. The notion that then you would have the audacity to do it over the goal line, right? The audacity to try to score the football should result in you losing possession. Just think about what we're talking about.
I agree with all that. I agree with you 100%.
But you still think, one second.
I thought you were joking when you were taking this stance. You're actually serious.
He's actually serious. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
This is incredible.
Logically, you're 1,000. In fact, logically, it should be no penalty. The guy should get it at the 1-yard line. Because if you're going to be consistent, if you fumble out of bounds, it's no big deal. You get it. When you fumble at the 36, you don't get it back at the 46. You get it at the 36. There's no penalty for fumbling out of bounds. So if you fumble at the 1-yard line, according to your logic, and I actually agree with you logically, that if you fumble at the 1-yard line, you should get it at the 1-yard line. There should be no penalty for fumbling into the end zone at all. But the reason I like it is, as I said, it's not a logic thing. It's a little rule, something nice for the defense, because they get nothing nice.
Nothing nice ever
happens for the defense. Everything is, we need more points because we
are big. And on. And it goes, and we actually get it some football game analysis as well. But anyway, that's fine. It's the Beating the Book podcast. It's the Megapod Beating the Book podcast, wherever podcasts are distributed. Adam later tweeted, Adam Chernoff. And that's the funny part about having guests on who are not used to like Aaron Schatz came on the podcast, and 5 minutes in, he goes, it's going to take me a little while to get used to the rhythm of this podcast. This podcast. I'm scared to ask him back. But Adam later tweeted, I thought Todd was joking. About halfway through the passionate rant, I realized he was serious. Then it was just enjoyment from there. 13 years of betting and nonstop football watching. Todd is the first I've ever heard defend the touchback rule, and he did it well. So anyway, there's that. We'll put that to bed once and for all. We'll see if that comes up during the championship weekend. Here's the BetMGM grid. We do this every week, but we're down to four teams. So this is not meant to put you on a bet or take you off a bet, but just if you want a snapshot of what the BetMGM public universe is doing, this is by ticket percentage. So this is by ticket count. The column on the left for those watching at VSiN.com and the VSiN app is the consensus. And then you have Colorado, Indiana, Mississippi, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and West Virginia. Tennessee, surprised again, they didn't bet the Titans more than any team here again this week. I don't know. Kansas City's number one, but it's not like it's outrageously, pardon me, number one with the bullet, to use the old Billboard magazine talk. They're number one in three of the nine. Green Bay's number one in three of the nine states, and Buffalo's three of the nine. Number ones in three of the nine state. Number one in three of the nine, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and West Virginia. So Tampa Bay is really, what you get out of this more than anything for me is not so much Kansas City and Buffalo being one and two, but that Green Bay is clearly ahead of Tampa Bay ticket count everywhere but Pennsylvania. So, you know, do you like being on the side of a Green Bay public? I don't care. I'm on that side. By the way, handle percentage, see if this is any different. Again, this is within the BetMGM universe. Handle percentage, that's much more random in terms of the money.
Kansas City just at the top of New Jersey, and that's enough to make it the number one.
But I mean, you couldn't throw those logos up in the air and have them land any more random than that throughout the nine states.
Yeah.
So not much to read into there, but interesting that the ticket count, it's definitely all about Green Bay. Green Bay, Green Bay, Green Bay. I'm comfortable with it. I got Green Bay first half and full game. Again, if you hear anybody saying there's a square side or a sharp side this week, please just mute them. No such thing. We'll come back. Jordan Sherwood to talk UFC 257. He's got thoughts coming back and picks next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Boy, I was going to just read this BetMGM promo, which I will momentarily. Well, let me get it out of the way because it'd be more awkward if I wait on it. To sign up with BetMGM for a chance to win $100 when you place a $1 wager on Conor McGregor to win against Dustin Poirier, just use bonus code VSIN100, get in the ring with the king to take advantage of this offer. Download the app and make your bet with bonus code VSIN100 today. Paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. And 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. We're just talking with Paul Carr earlier this hour about his, you know, we were talking about Tiger Woods' story when he was at ESPN, and we got into the whole subject of, is it true that these networks have, you know, pre-produced packages in case people die? And then we got into the whole Tim Kirkjian doing it for baseball. Hank Aaron just passed away. But for many, the true home run king. Hank Aaron retired with 755 career home runs, famously breaking at the time Babe Ruth's record of 714. But 755 was the glorious number to beat for most of our lives. Barry Bonds ends up eclipsing it. But Henry Hank Aaron passing away. Hammer and Hank just come across. Boy, oh boy, did we portend. We didn't mean to do that earlier on the show, but that's sad news. So Hank Aaron, who was beloved by so many and really like not even a long ball hitter, he would just sort of casually put it over the fence, passing away. Iconic Hank Aaron, dead at the age of 86. No artful way to segue to a little UFC 257, but we love having this guy on not only this show, but also, of course, on Primetime Action. He is the host of the main event at ESPN West Palm. Wood on 106.3 is where you can find him. Jordan Sherwood joins us. How you doing, Jordan?
I'm good, Gil. Yeah, no easy transition from that, but appreciate the time to talk a little UFC 257.
Yeah, you know, it happens. It happens during the show, and we move on because people want to hear about stuff that is actionable this weekend. And so we will work our way up to McGregor and Poirier because I want to get your thoughts on how you think the money will sort of move and then how that should be bet accordingly. But let's go to the prelims. Anything there first catch your attention?
Definitely on the prelims, even though it's a guy that missed weight earlier on today, Khalil Rountree in his matchup with Marcin Porcino. Porcino is a guy that has had three UFC fights and three first round knockout losses to guys that do not hit as hard or as well as Khalil Rountree. And, you know, Khalil Rountree in his UFC career has been kind of hit or miss, but I think definitely this is a play where he's going to hit. Marcin Porcino's defense is not that well when it comes to the upper echelon of the light heavyweight division. So I'm playing the under in that fight. And even though it's a $2 price right now, Rountree via KO is probably the likely outcome. So I would suggest looking at that. And then the other one, as you got that list there, is Antonio Carlos Jr. and Brad Tavares. I like the over in that fight. I think that, again, you're talking about a guy in Brad Tavares, veteran of the UFC, he's never been submitted. Shoeface, Antonio Carlos Jr. is one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners, but he always struggles with guys that press the pace, guys that are good wrestlers and good defense like Brad Tavares. So it's the under in the Rountree Porcino fight and then the over in the Carlos Jr. Tavares fight, at least for the prelims that I like.
Ooh, I like that. And Rountree by KO, did I hear that as well?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, it's a $2 bet right now, so I might wait a little bit if you can get it a little bit under $2. But, I mean, that's the likely outcome. Again, I mean, this is a guy, Porcino, like he walks towards his opponent with his hands down. Like, I don't know why that's good defense, but he does, and he gets hit in the face for it. So, look for that in the Rountree Porcino fight.
Jordan, I am no mixed martial arts expert, but I'm going to say you're right about that. Probably yeah, not a fine
probably
defense.
Bad defense.
Yes. all right, so under in the Rountree fight. If you want to get frisky and do it by KO, Jordan sort of endorses that as well. I'm sure there's people listening who are like, well, I'll probably put them in money line parlays if they're in that kind of thing too, just to win it. And then the Junior Tavares over, Carlos Jr., Antonio Carlos Jr., Brad Tavares over in that one. Okay. Now on the main card here, before we get to the main event, what do you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually it's a very good price on Dan Hooker right now at $1.30, as you see it there. You know, Michael Chandler, this is his UFC debut, a phenomenal fighter that had success in Bellator, lightweight champion there several times, and definitely has fought, you know, some really tough guys. But he's going right into the Shark Tank, and not only the Shark Tank of the lightweight division in the UFC, but against a guy that probably has the best chin in the lightweight division and a guy that really will not struggle against the wrestling of a Michael Chandler. So I think there's value certainly in Dan Hooker there because Michael Chandler sometimes overextends himself, you know, looks for that overhand right. And that'll be a recipe for disaster for a guy in Dan Hooker that just got off of a tough main event 5-round fight against Dustin Poirier. He was fighting in the main event, but Dan Hooker is for real. He's one of the best 155ers. So it's a fade on Chandler, even though he does come in with a lot of hype and a notoriety from outside the UFC. I like Dan Hooker in this spot, especially at that $1.30 price.
I know some people who love betting nothing but dogs. Even they like Dan Hooker this weekend as a slight favorite at -130. And I wonder how many people are going to couple these with NFL plays this week. This feels like one of these where I'm like, I'm not going to buy this. I'm not going to buy this. And then come Saturday, I'm going to be like, I got to buy this thing. I got to watch all of this. All right. Anything else before we get to the main event here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly something perhaps in the Jessica Eye, Joanne Calderwood fight. I think that, you know, I'm going to stay away just because I don't trust either fighter. No pun intended. But Calderwood, I think, just has more of a skill set to cause some issues for Jessica Eye. She fights at the forensic pace. It just depends on what Joanne Calderwood shows up. She's mentally checked out of fights before. But in a division that is so lack of contenders, One win literally gets you a title shot. And these are, you know, Jessica Eye has fought for the championship. Joanne Calderwood was supposed to fight for the championship, but then opted to take another fight and subsequently lost. So bounce back fight, I believe, for Calderwood. I'll have a small play on her. But again, not my highest priority if I'm looking at the main card or some of those prelim selections I said earlier on.
Okay, gotcha. So Calderwood, if anything, a small play for those who want to get into that. Okay, typically, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, Jordan, with, you know, the average sort of main event fight here in a UFC event, money comes in on dogs. People love betting dogs. They love, you know, look, it's wired into. They like betting a little to win a lot. And so you often get muted prices on a favorite late. That is not the case when Conor McGregor is around. It is just a constant influx of Conor McGregor money. This has kind of hovered. It hasn't gone up yet. It's minus 300 on Conor, plus 240 on Poirier. If you have conviction on Poirier, do you not wait and wait and wait here till the very end? And how do you see this fight?
Yeah, I think you have to wait until the last moment if you're going to, you know, put some money down on Dustin Poirier, because I do believe money will continue to flow in on Conor McGregor. I don't see how Dustin Poirier wins this fight, and he is a talented fighter, one of the best fighters that we have in the lightweight division. It's just that what we've seen from Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier does not have any of the skill sets that have caused Conor McGregor problems or his losses. I mean, Conor McGregor to lose is going to have to fight a guy that's going to push the pace and wrestle him. And Dustin Poirier, I mean, he's a good grappler, but he's not at the level where it's going to cause some issues for Conor McGregor. And he gets hit way too much. And Conor McGregor is a precise striker and a powerful striker. And I really think we're going to get a repeat for what happened 6 years ago when they fought at 145, when McGregor starched him in about 90 seconds. I really believe that. Wow. I think Conor McGregor, and it's not, you know, the talk that Conor McGregor's had that he's refocused, you know, in tune and ready to fight. Like Conor says that at every fight. Like my biggest storyline actually from this card is what happens Sunday. What happens Sunday? What does Conor McGregor say Sunday? Because that's what I'm most curious about, what's next for him. So my play would be like, if anything, I mean, I don't really have anything. I think I'm just going to sit back and watch this fight because truthfully, I don't think Dustin Poirier has anything that's going to cause some issues for Conor McGregor. He's not going to be able to drag him into deep waters because he's going to have to wrestle him to do it. And I don't think Dustin Poirier has that skill. And I think Conor McGregor is ready and he's going to finish Dustin Poirier very early in this fight. And then obviously call out Khabib Nurmagomedov and ask him for a rematch at some point later this year.
Wasn't McGregor saying he wants to fight seven times the next 18 months or something? Like he's all bullish about it now, all of a sudden.
Exactly. And we've heard that before from Conor McGregor, and God bless him, because the sport is better for when he's focused and he's fighting. But you know, I just don't foresee that happening. It just gone to the well once too often with this storyline about Conor McGregor being motivated, and then all of a sudden he can't get a fight because he can't get a contract or the negotiation or the title shot that he wants.
Wow. So it sounds like even if Poirier was like plus 400 or plus 500, you wouldn't even bet him.
I just don't. Yeah. I mean, and maybe, but again, probably also depending on how the night goes. Like then, all right, let's have some fun with Dustin Poirier late. Maybe you bet the over 2.5. That's like at $1.70. That might be worth it. But yeah, Conor McGregor, I think, wins this fight, wins it pretty handily.
Okay. So again, the most confident Hooker over Chandler Hooker minus 130, the Roundtree under, Junior Tavares over. Maybe a little something on Calderwood if you want to get, some action in on that as well, but that's a lesser bet. Jordan, can't thank you enough, man. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Gil. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Jordan Sherwood, you can follow him on Twitter at Wood on 1063 from Fat Jack Sports. Kind of him to join us. JVT will have some thoughts on UFC as well. Let's get his take on that. But we'll talk NBA with him. We'll talk about his NFL picks. Vinny will join us. We'll also have JVT scolding Jason about his Twitter handle. We'll get to the bottom of that. That's probably more important than anything. Coming back right here on The Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.